But the Greeks have never recanted their errors. The popes have never repealed their sentence. And from this thunderbolt we may date the consummation of the schism. It was enlarged by each ambitious step of the Roman pontiffs. The emperors blushed and trembled at the ignominious fate of their royal brethren of Germany. And the people were scandalized by the temporal power and military life of the Latin clergy. The aversion of the Greeks and Latins was nourished and manifested in the three first expeditions to the Holy Land. Alexius Comnenus contrived the absence at least of the formidable pilgrims. His successors, Manuel and Isaac Angelus, conspired with the Moslems for the ruin of the greatest princes of the Franks. And their crooked and malignant policy was seconded by the active and voluntary obedience of every order of their subjects. Of this hostile temper, a large portion may doubtless be ascribed to the difference of language, dress, and manners, which severs and alienates the nations of the globe. The pride as well as the prudence of the sovereign was deeply wounded by the intrusion of foreign armies that claimed a right of traversing his dominions and passing under the walls of his capital. His subjects were insulted and plundered by the rude strangers of the West. And the hatred of the pusillanimous Greeks was sharpened by secret envy of the bold and pious enterprises of the Franks. But these profane causes of national enmity were fortified and inflamed by the venom of religious zeal. Instead of a kind embrace and hospitable reception from their Christian brethren of the East, every tongue was taught to repeat the names of schismatic and heretic, more odious to an orthodox ear than those of pagan and infidel. Instead of being loved for the general conformity of faith and worship, they were abhorred for some rules of discipline, some questions of theology, in which themselves or their teachers might differ from the Oriental Church. In the crusade of Louis VII, the Greek clergy washed and purified the altars which had been defiled by the sacrifice of a French priest. The companions of Frederick Barbarossa deplore the injuries which they endured, both in word and deed, from the peculiar rancor of the bishops and monks. Their prayers and sermons excited the people against the impious barbarians, and the patriarch is accused of declaring that the faithful might obtain the redemption of all their sins by the extirpation of the schismatics. An enthusiast named Dorotheus alarmed the fears and restored the confidence of the emperor by a prophetic assurance that the German heretic, after assaulting the gate of Blachines, would be made a signal example of the divine vengeance. The passage of these mighty armies were rare and perilous events, but the Crusades introduced a frequent and familiar intercourse between the two nations, which enlarged their knowledge without abating their prejudices. The wealth and luxury of Constantinople demanded the productions of every climate. These imports were balanced by the art and labor of her numerous inhabitants. Her situation invites the commerce of the world, and in every period of her existence that commerce has been in the hands of foreigners. After the decline of Amalfi, the Venetians, Pisans, and Genoese introduced their factories and settlements into the capital of the empire. Their services were rewarded with honors and immunities. They acquired the possession of lands and houses. Their families were multiplied by marriages with the natives. And after the toleration of a Mohammedan mosque, it was impossible to interdict the churches of the Roman Rite. The two wives of Manuel Comnenus were of the race of the Franks. The first, a sister-in-law of the Emperor Conrad. The second, a daughter of the Prince of Antioch. He obtained for his son Alexius a daughter of Philip Augustus, King of France, and he bestowed his own daughter on a Marquis of Montferrat, who was educated and dignified in the palace of Constantinople. The Greek encountered the arms and aspired to the empire of the West. He esteemed the valor and trusted the fidelity of the Franks. Their military talents were unfitly recompensed by the lucrative offices of judges and treasurers. The policy of Manuel had solicited the alliance of the Pope, and the popular voice accused him of a partial bias to the nation and religion of the Latins. During his reign and that of his successor Alexius, they were exposed at Constantinople to the reproach of foreigners, heretics, and favorites, and this triple guilt was severely expiated in the tumult which announced the return and elevation of Andronicus. The people rose in arms. From the Asiatic shore, the tyrant dispatched his troops and galleys.